My next guest, Dr. Yolanda Coombs, has many roles, one of which is as a transformation specialist. Her interest in people's behaviour started with studying how environments affect physical and mental health and the impact this has on work and society. She now helps leaders and teams to better understand their own and others' behaviour. Over the past 35 years, she's worked for international organisations such as the World Bank and the World Health Organization, as well as coaching senior leaders in businesses and governments in Europe and Africa. She has a master's and a PhD and is the author of several books and peer-reviewed publications. She joins me on the line now. Yolanda, I hope there's very little on your New Year's resolution list this year. You've achieved a lot. I hope rest is up there at the top somewhere.
That's very kind to say. I think I'm one of these people who's a lifelong learner, and like yourself, I'm very interested in wellness in all its forms. And so I was listening to your show last week, and I think I took on board the idea of setting an intention. And so maybe one of the intentions for me is to have a little bit more fun and a little bit more playtime this year.
Yeah, that's a really good one, because I think sometimes we forget that, particularly when you're asked, what do you want for a new year? We tend to go to work first and professional goals that we want to set for ourselves. And I know that on the one hand, you spend quite a lot of time, if you are in the working world, in your job, but there's so many other facets to our life and to our wellness.
Absolutely. And I think one of the issues that we see these days is that there's such an integration between work and home life. And, you know, we used to be able to compartmentalize a lot more. So if work wasn't going well, we could focus on home or family or other relationships. But now everything is so intertwined, and it makes, particularly since the pandemic with hybrid working, it's very difficult to separate these things out in that way. And I think that makes it much harder for people.
Do you think there's such a thing as a work-life balance?
It's a really interesting question. I would have said probably 20 years ago when my children were small, that's what I was striving for. And it got to a point in my career at the time, and I finally left because I couldn't achieve a work-life balance. And I remember having an exit interview, and at the time, I'm not sure I'd heard this term, but I remember saying, you know, the problem is not for me to try and find balance. The issue is I need to be able to integrate them more. So, you know, I want to be able to go and watch my son play soccer in the middle of the afternoon and then perhaps work in the evening. And at the time where I was working, it was all about face time in the office. You were being paid for the hours. You were supposed to show up. And I don't think that works particularly for women.
And do you think we have a more open society now where we can still say those things, particularly as a parent? Do you think it's okay in the workplace to say, I'm going to head to a soccer match and I'm going to work through the night? You hope that the new hybrid way of working has brought that in, but I kind of fear post pandemic that we've gone pretty much back to the way we were before.
Well, I do think that's the case in some businesses and organizations. I do think they have gone back, and I think that one of the difficulties that we see is that people often pay lip service to hybrid work. So they say, yeah, we have a hybrid policy, but you need to be in the office on Mondays and Fridays, or, you know, you need to be here at these times, in which case that isn't really hybrid because it's just saying you're working from home at set times. And I think, you know, it is one of those things that there is a little bit of, I don't know whether it's competition, but you know, that thing you can say to somebody, can I call you back? I'm just taking my lunch break. And they'll say, oh, lunch break. Lucky for you. Love that for you that you've got time for a lunch break. Like what you're doing is something wrong, when actually what you're doing is you're recharging and getting yourself ready to work more productively later on in the day.
Yeah. And it's a big mindset shift. And look, I say that we've gone back to a lot of the same ways, but I know there are organisations and businesses up and down the country investing in wellness and a lot more open to talking about diversity, inclusion, hybrid working and what it means to fully invest in their employees. So, you know, I say that rather glibly. I kind of did a sweeping generalization, but it's about, I suppose, people's attitudes to honesty and what we're willing to ask for our life in the workplace and outside of it. And I think that's really important. What's your advice to somebody at the start of the new year who maybe feels they're not happy in their workplace?
Well, I think that the word you used there, which I think is really important, and that's honesty. And, you know, we talk a lot about honesty, being real, authenticity, you know, showing up as who we are. And I think one of the reasons why we become unhappy at work is if we are being suppressed or made to behave in a way that isn't true to ourselves. And, you know, depression comes from suppression. And, you know, so it's really important to make sure that you work within a business and an organization where you can show up as your true self. And I think that's what we're seeing as one of the things that underpins the great resignation or the quiet quitting, is that there are more and more people who have realized, maybe through what the pressing pause during the pandemic, that there is so much more to work than just showing up and being told what to do. I mean, one of the things we found from some work we did for a white paper, I worked with the Core Story, and what we found is that people really want meaning now. They want meaning in their jobs. They want the values that are important to them in their personal life and their home life and the relationships they have. They want to see those values reflected in their work life. And it doesn't have to be that those values are great big lofty things of, you know, we're going to be making the world a better place. But you need to be engaged with your heart as well as your mind.
So I think for a lot of people to hear that concept that they can find work, I mean, you say if you can get paid for a job that you would do for free, you're in the right area. That people might struggle a little with that. They think you work to live, you get the money you need to pay your bills, and to have this meaning and purpose is a little idealistic. What would you say to people that might feel that way?
Yeah, no, it might sound like that, but I think, you know, it's a bit like how we say to the kids when they're doing something, when you're doing a job, do your best, put your best effort into it. And there's a great story, and I'm not sure how true it is, but it's a great story, so I'll tell it anyway, of during the 1960s when President Kennedy went round NASA. And of course, at the time, you know, there was this big rush to put a man on the moon and to get the first, particularly against the Russians, to get into space. And he went round and he was shown around NASA, and he met the astronauts, and he met the people who were all the engineers and all the scientists. And then at one point he was taken into a room, and there was a lady who was serving the tea, and he turned to her and he said to her, "So, you know, what is it you do around here?" And she said, "Well, my job is to put a man on the moon." And that's because even though her job was to serve the tea and empty the waste paper baskets, she was still part of that bigger purpose, which was to put a man on the moon. Now, I know that's a lofty goal, but, you know, if you work in a company where you feel part of it, where you feel connected, where you're able to express yourself, where you're able to turn up to work as yourself, then it's going to help you, particularly on the bad days and not just on payday.
That gave me chills, that story. And it's about having that self-belief and that purpose within you, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you're part of something a little bit bigger. I absolutely love that. And never let truth get in the way of a good story. I really hope it is true. Because you would think that the answer was, oh, I just bring the tea and coffee. That word just, which is still such an integral part of the flow of that organisation. And that's what I thought the lesson was going to be in it. And I think there's so many of us sort of apologise for ourselves. I love Marianne Williamson's poem where she says people aren't afraid of what they can't do. And I'm butchering her beautiful words. They're afraid that they're more powerful than they ever thought possible. And I think we really disconnect from that at times.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of the reason we disconnect from it is because the culture of the organization or business that we're working in can sometimes go against that, and it doesn't allow us to have the meaning. And I think that's why people become disengaged. And, you know, there's been some work done by Gallup over the last few years looking at engagement. And currently in Europe, they found that only 14% of the workforce are engaged. So in other words, 86% are not. And a lack of engagement at work causes so many issues. I mean, the global cost is estimated at something between $7 and $8 trillion from lack of engagement. Because when you are engaged, when you have got purpose, when you have got meaning, you're so much more productive and you get stuff done. And when you're disengaged, at the very low levels of disengagement, where you're kind of like actively disengaged, you are maybe creating or perpetuating a toxic work culture. You're much more likely to be unethical. You're much more likely to commit fraud or to cut corners. And so having that purpose is an incredibly important thing that I think a lot of businesses overlook. In, you know, they may have it in the C-suite, but they don't cascade it down and get everybody behind it. And that's what's really important. And so one of the things that we're interested at the Core Story is helping businesses really develop a sense of kind of human-centered leaders, of being able to bring more human experiences, bring heart back into the workplace. Because actually, not only is it good for people, it's actually also good for profit.
How important is it as individuals that we find out what our meaning and purpose is? We spoke at the start of the interview about finding an intention for the new year and how you want to feel through the year. Is that along a similar vein, that's how we should be looking at how we want to live our life?
Yeah, I think it is. Because I think that, you know, when we lose sight of, I don't want to say goals, but when we lose sight of what's important to us, that's when we begin to feel lost, and that's when we begin to feel disconnected. And if you've ever read any of the books about happiness or how to get a more fulfilled life, nearly all of them agree that it comes down to the quality of your relationships, and it comes down to how you want to live your life and what the match is between what you hope for and what you get. And, you know, I think over the last 20 years or so, we've become very kind of obsessed with houses and cars and things and stuff. And actually, that's not what really makes you happy. And that's not what really gives you purpose and meaning. It's about relationships, and it's about those personal relationships, but it's also about work relationships. But it's also about a sense of achievement. What have I done? What have I contributed? There's some interesting research which has been done with people who are terminally ill. And one of the things that they want to know is that they have some kind of legacy. It might be a legacy through children, but it might be a legacy through something that they contributed to. It doesn't necessarily need to be work, but it might be, you know, coaching the local camogie team. Whatever it might be, everybody needs to feel that their life had some meaning. And given the amount of time we spend at work, it's why having meaning and purpose at work really does help to spill into other aspects of our life.
And I'm conscious then of people listening that maybe work in the home or could be studying at present. You don't necessarily have to have a job to have meaning and purpose in your life. And I think what you're saying there about having a disengaged employee, you don't want to be disengaged in your life full stop, because as you say, you miss out on all the opportunities to celebrate achievement or to learn from things that don't go as well as you might have expected.
Yeah, absolutely, Claire. And I think it's one of those things. I can't remember where I heard this saying, but I love it, which is, we cannot build on the success we do not celebrate. And I think that means celebrating all the small things, all the small achievements. If you think about a small child who was learning to walk, taking those first few steps across the living room. If they took three or four steps and they fell, we wouldn't say to them, well, that was useless. You know, three or four steps, I'm expecting more. We'd be celebrating, we'd be cheering, we'd be going, wow, look at you, you've taken your first steps, that's wonderful. And I think what happens as we get older is we begin to say, well, it was only three or four steps, it was nothing. And we forget to take the time to celebrate what we have done, what we've achieved. And I think it's also because we spend too much time comparing upwards. And when you compare upwards, you never win, because there's always somebody taking more steps than you. But when you compare downwards and you see, well, there are some people who never get to take a single step, then you can celebrate only having taken one.
It's such an important mindset shift. I was kind of posting on social media recently of, you know, the walks I took over Christmas, many that I didn't want to go on that I ended up loving once I got out there. And somebody messaged me, she's a previous guest on this show, actually, and she said she started saying, instead of saying, I have to go on a walk, she now says, I get to go on a walk. And that just blew my mind. And it is that shift in your mindset. And I think we also need to talk more about failure being part of the process, because we think and expect everything to be linear, that there's a before and after, and you get to a certain place and it's just all success all the way along. But like the analogy you gave of the toddler, falling is very much part of it. And I think we should talk about the messy middle part a little bit more, rather than just the people who get to the top and we ignore that they fell many times along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's really important. I think it's really important for people who are at the top, particularly those business leaders or people in positions that we all look to share the moments that they have fallen. I know I've worked with some groups before where I've done some coaching, and we start by talking about all the times that we've made mistakes, not just in business life or work life, but in our personal lives. And you can see it's at the opening weekend of a retreat that we do, and you can see that all these people have come on this leadership call thinking that they were going to be told what amazing lives the faculty have had. And when we tell them that between them, we've had so many breakdowns, divorces, spells in hospital, being fired, being sued, they're amazed. But then what it does is it helps them to understand that when we do talk about the successes, that we're speaking from, you know, a real place, from an authentic place. And that's what I think is missing so much in our lives now. You know, we have the social media culture where we all post the best sides of ourselves, but we don't post the mistakes and the failures. And I think if you're growing up in that environment, it must be incredibly difficult.
Yeah, it's the fake realness that we are surrounded by at the minute. Dr. Yolanda, you're in Kenya at the moment, but you will be returning to Ireland. Will you come into studio? Because you've many gems and insights to share. I've absolutely loved talking to you today. To find out more about Dr. Yolanda Coombs' work, you can go to thecorestory.com. Yolanda, thank you so much.
Thank you. And I'd love to come in and chat to you again.
Brilliant. Look forward to meeting you face to face. Yolanda, thank you so much. So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to my producer, Aoife Breen, and Hugo De Silva Scott, who was on sound. And thanks as ever to you for listening. I will see you next week.